sights to show you.
Welcome to the 18th episode of The Sirens of Scream, the geek podcast that proves sometimes dead is better. I'm here with Jackie DeVore.
Hello.
And Melissa Megan.
Good evening.
Sierra Houck, and how are you guys doing?
Well, we were just talking about the impending doom of our own civilization, which seems fitting for us to cover Resident Evil today.
While I was getting ready for this and like telling my friends about it, I kept on making President Evil jokes.
That's solid.
We're gonna escape the President Evil and go watch Resident Evil.
That just gave me an idea for a future episode. Uh-oh. We should have a couple of our favorite guests on and have everybody choose their apocalypse of choice, and then we can plan for it.
That would be fun.
How we're going to get through it.
There's a podcast called Bunker Buddies, which this is just an added bonus recommendation now. But they talk about different types of apocalypses and how you would survive them. As Travis McElroy from My Brother, My Brother and Me, who is delightful. So
that sounds like awfully...
Sounds pretty
meaty.
Fun.
Like, it sounds necessary right now.
Yeah, and it goes from, like, totally possible things of like natural disasters and like economy crashing and things like that, or like how would you survive Waterworld, and like what about zombies?
I love it.
You can't beat them, join them, right?
Yep.
We'll just plan our own apocalypse.
Yeah, which I mean is relevant for the latest Resident Evil movie, not to spoil it, but all about apocalypses and how they start. But before we start talking about all the Resident Evil things, Jackie, do you want to tell us some recommendations?
Sure. My first recommendation today is an artist. Her name is Nicola Samori. And I would honestly recommend just Google image searching her name, because her artwork is really unique and it's really creepy and really awesome. She basically paints and oil paints like a Renaissance artist. Mm. And it's really hyper-realistic and detailed and stuff, but... the faces or something, usually the face, but something about the painting is just completely fucking weird and bizarre. And it's like, it's a really jarring type of art, because you look at it and it's like you're seeing something straight out of a castle somewhere in France, but then like there'll be mutations in the face or a completely smeared and destroyed face or this weird like veil of death over this person. And it's so weird, but I absolutely love it. I'm completely in love with her art right now.
I think grotesque is a good word for this.
Yeah, that's perfect.
It's very grotesque, like melting bodies and stuff.
Yeah, and she apparently does some sculptures that are really fucking cool too.
That's what I just looked up her website, and that's what I just saw, was a sculpture of a body that looks like it's kind of half melted, like the skin falling off of it.
Yeah, it's fun. And there's one that's carved out of one giant block of wood, and it basically looks like somebody who just walked out of a nuclear holocaust. It's crazy. But I'm loving it. So hopefully you guys will too. The other thing is not quite a recommendation, but sort of like a backup of a recommendation. Last week, Melissa was talking about The Autopsy of Jane Doe, which I finally got a chance to watch, and I love it. It was so good. I absolutely loved this movie. It was like wonderfully suspenseful, I thought.
I've been dying to message you and ask for your review on this.
Yeah, I was gonna message you right after I watch it. Like, I've actually been trying not to message you about it because I wanted to talk about it here. But it was like really suspenseful in just the perfect kinds of ways. It's a very supernatural kind of horror movie, for those of you who didn't hear Melissa's recommendation on the last episode for any reason. Basically, it's this woman's body is brought into a morgue that's run by a father and son kind of shop there. And they're digging into this body, quite literally, and just discovering all these bizarre things surrounding this body and all these bizarre things in this body, and start looking up where this woman may have been and where she may have come from. And we had a discussion last time about how you can guess the twist of it about halfway through. But they don't try to hide it. They're actually guiding you right toward that twist. So I don't even know if I would call it a twist at that point.
We talked about last week, kind of, you asked me the question of whether me being able to anticipate what was happening in this movie took away from my enjoyment of it. So how do you feel about that now that you've seen it?
I actually thought it was perfect, because instead of it being like a twist and reveal kind of situation, like I was kind of expecting from what I've heard from you and other people here. Well, not necessarily. I believe you were pretty straightforward on it's not this weird twist that's gonna pop out at you kind of thing. But since they like guide you through this and they basically like build up the information there, it's more of a discovery of putting all these pieces together kind of situation, which I thought was really cool and really more of a tying things together kind of thing. I enjoyed it. Knowing the details there didn't take away from the rest of the movie for me at all. I just thought it was honestly planned out well and plotted out in a way that you're supposed to know that information.
I just realized I think this movie would make a great video game. You had to like explore the space and find all the clues to figure out what's happening. And then, you know, when you figure it out, then you have to like, I don't know, then you play a different, the next level would be like where the body is the next time.
Ooh. I like that. I like that a lot.
You know, and then you'd have like a different story for wherever the body lands each time.
What if that upcoming game about the morgue incorporated the storyline of the autopsy of Jane Doe and its mouth? Yeah. Oh, I like how like they did a mashup kind of like Payday with John Wick. You know what I mean? Like throw that character in there.
You should get in touch with Gabby and just tell her, you know, this Easter egg, you need to just put this one body into every level of the game somewhere.
I'll throw in my recommendations real fast because the first one is kind of a throwaway, but I've taken a little bit of time off of work because I'm going to be interviewing for like a full-time position there, which means I'm not working this last week and this week. So I've been having a lot of time to just watch haunted house shows and a lot of those like reenactment, like somebody's telling the story and then the like cheesy reenactor actors are playing it out.
Side question, how do you get to be an actor just in reenactments?
I assume from the quality you just pick people off the street.
I don't know what street that is, would be really fun.
So I've been watching a lot of Destination America, and they have a new show coming out that they're promoting a lot right now called Killing Bigfoot, and it's like all of the other Bigfoot hunting shows, but they're literally hunting him, and like we're gonna get a body, we're gonna put a body on the slab and prove once and for all that Bigfoot is real, and I have a lot of feelings about this.
I don't like this at all.
I know. I don't want people to hurt Bigfoot. And I especially don't want them to be, like, given a television show for this. But if you... I am also... would be very excited to have somebody prove that Bigfoot is real. And it seems like the only way to do that would be to have a physical body. So it seems like they're going about it in the way of, like, we just want to prove that he's real. Like, we're doing it for the science of it, quote-unquote science. It makes me very angry. But that show is starting on February 4th. So I'm going to watch it. I'll see how I feel about it after actually seeing it. But...
please report back. That sounds horrifying.
I just don't want them to kill Bigfoot. What did Bigfoot do to you?
Just chills up there by himself.
Keeping to himself. Don't mess with Bigfoot. And then my real recommendation is this magazine series called Blank Destroys Blank. It covers science fiction, horror, and fantasy. The different magazines are either People of Color Destroy Horror, Queers Destroy Horror, or Women Destroy Horror. So it's all of the stories or comics are done by either people of color, queers, or women. So at a time when we definitely want to support these different kinds of artists who maybe don't get their voices heard as much, this seems like a really wonderful one-stop shop kind of place for all of your sci-fi, horror, and fantasy needs. And you can find that at destroysf.com.
Looks like it's heavily focused on science.
Yeah, well, it's sci-fi, different. Horror, and fantasy, and they're broken up into different magazines. So if you pick the horror one, you're all just getting horror. And it looks like it's kind of a mixture of like comics and short stories and writing and all of that kind of stuff.
Right away, whatever covers on the website right now for the horror one looks rad as hell.
You're talking about the woman with the mushrooms growing out of her? Oh, that's the one I just opened.
The Nightmare, issue 49, it has the silhouette of a man with a knife looking very scary and a woman turning around suddenly.
Mine opened up on Nightmare, issue 25.
Interesting.
It's got a woman.
Well, they've done at least 49 issues, as far as I can tell.
Got like mushrooms growing out of her body.
I'm really intrigued by issue 25 now.
And these, I think you can get them as a physical, actual magazine off of Amazon, or you can get just an ebook of it. So if anybody's looking to escape the political horrors of today, you can easily dive into this kind of
horror. Okay, I'll see you guys later.
Yeah. Looks like there's a lot of really good content here.
I'm going to go read some magazines.
Yeah.
Just gonna drop Melissa off here.
Well, before you do that, will you tell us your recommendations?
Yes, I will. Okay, my first recommendation is a comic book series. It's been around for a while. Recently, Volume 3 came out in December, and I'm catching up, so I had to talk about it. It's called Descender. I'm sure I've mentioned it here on a list somewhere. It's written by Jeff Lemire and Dustin Nguyen. So it is about a young robot's struggle to stay alive in a universe where all androids have been outlawed and bounty hunters lurk on every planet. The rip-roaring and heartfelt cosmic odyssey that pits humanity against machine and world against world to create a sprawling space opera. This series is incredible. And I mean, I love Jeff Lemire. I'm pretty sure I've said that several times on the show already. Descender, Jackie, I think you would love this because it's heavily focused on a little boy robot who was built to be a family companion. And just this isn't a spoiler, this is kind of where the story starts out, but the boy's planet ends up being destroyed and his family disappears and he wakes up alone and everybody's gone. There's some kind of like giant robots that come that show up one day and attack everything, and that sets off this kind of racial fear against robots where people decide that they're just going to wipe out robots because they don't know like if the robots are connected to these bad things or not. So they just start wiping them out and destroying them. And this little guy wakes up on a planet all by himself, all alone, and he doesn't know where his family went. And the little boy that he was best friends with is gone. And he's got a little dog with him that also belonged to the boy, who's a little robot.
Robot dog.
The two of them kind of set out on a really incredible adventure together. And it's very much a space opera. There's action and there's lots of really cool characters in the story. But this little robot just like grabbed my heart as soon as I read this, and I've been attached to this series ever since. So there's now 3 volumes of it out since December. You can really like sit down and, you know, marathon this story if you want to catch up on it. And the artwork is absolutely stunning and beautiful.
Yeah, I'm looking at the covers right now and it looks really cool.
Yeah, it's a really, really sweet story. Really heartbreaking at times, but the little boy's name is Tim 21.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And his little dog. I can't remember the little doggy's name, but he's really cute. He just runs around yapping at everybody. But he's trying really hard to protect him. He's just a little dog robot. My second recommendation feels kind of funny now because Jackie recommended this like super fine artist. And I'm recommending something very opposite of that. The artist I want to talk about, his name is Gris Grimley. I originally saw this guy's art in a children's book that I bought for my son called The Dangerous Alphabet, which is, I believe, written by Neil Gaiman, and the art was by Gris Grimley. And it is so weird and creepy that we decided not to read it to him for a while. We read it like once or twice. Yeah. And he just had this look on his face the whole time, like he was really being disturbed by it. So we're like, okay, we're not going
to
read that.
You'll have to read a little bit of that to us in our next episode.
I will. It's yeah. Really easy to read because it doesn't have a lot of information on each page, but the story gets really dark. So I don't know if it was actually meant to be a kid's book. I just grabbed it because it was a cute alphabet book with awesome art. Mm-hmm. And then recently I went to an art sale at my local library and I found this book called Edgar Allan Poe's Tales of Mystery and Madness. I'm going to show it to you guys. I know our listeners can hear it.
Cool.
And I didn't even realize at the time that it was the same artist, but I just grabbed it and brought it home and then thought, this art looks really freaking familiar. And it's because it's in that alphabet. Here, I'll show you a page. It's really cool. It's like children's book style art, but really morbid and bloody and gruesome.
Mm-hmm. Had a really beautiful style with watercolor here.
Yeah, and if you go to his website, grisgrimley.com, he's got some really, really beautiful striking paintings. He's done books, he's done all kinds of stuff. Magazine publications, painting. He's got a store that's like packed with fun things like holiday cards and pins and patches and shirts.
His Hellboy painting here is awesome. I might have to get that for my husband, who's definitely not listening to this and definitely doesn't know I'm going to surprise him with it.
Yeah, he does like the grim fairy tales, all kinds of cool storybooks. Just lots of beautiful stuff. Mm-hmm. And I love his art style. And I thought, you know, this is the second time that this guy's art has kind of fallen into my hands somehow. So I need to talk about him. And once I looked him up, I was just way more impressed with all the various things that he's done.
You can definitely tell he was influenced by the art of scary stories.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Stephen Gammell.
Yeah. Stephen Gammell.
Also our bud Timmy B, Tim Burton.
Yeah.
It's very Tim Burton-y. but like in a good way, not in a cheesy ripoff way.
It's got all the like, you mean like the curly cues and the...
Yeah, not just like black and white stripes and spirals.
Hard to pull off, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Every single character just looks nefarious and evil.
I love it.
Yeah, I'll read you guys some ABCs one day.
We should have an episode where we just each read a short story or a section of story.
That would be really fun. But we should do it on video.
Yeah.
We'll publish it on video so that we can share pictures too.
Have the only lighting be just like a fuckload of candles all around us.
We'll have to get a really big armchair for each of us.
Yeah, like silver goblets that we hold and swish something around in the whole time.
This
yeah.
is sounding more and more like it's going to happen. That's all I have for you.
Cool. As we already alluded to, we're going to talk about Resident Evil and all things that that entails, which is a lot. So let's take a quick break and then dive into it. Go, Till and Rhodey. Go, Till and Rhodey. Go, Till and Rhodey, the everybody.
I was raised in a deep, dark hole. A prisoner with no parole. They locked me up and took my soul.
In 1996, Capcom released a game that was unlike anything players had seen before. Resident Evil was released at a time when most horror games were more like point-and-click adventures, and they never quite managed to give players the adrenaline rush that they got from Resident Evil. That first Resident Evil inspired the future of survival horror games, and a massively successful franchise of games, 6 live-action movies, 4 animated films, comic books, novels, and tons of other merchandise. Over the years, the franchise has mutated into many forms, including action-adventure, third-person shooter, online co-op, and now, for the first time, it is a first-person survival with the release of Resident Evil 7. And although Resident Evil has seen its fair share of failures, as they've added to, deviated from, and reimagined that original game, if it wasn't for this franchise, we might not have the horror games that we love today, games like Dead Space, Amnesia, Silent Hill, Outlast, Left 4 Dead, The Last of Us, and so many others. When we first started planning for this episode, we thought that we knew what Resident Evil was about. Big guns and crazy mutated monsters and evil corporations. But then when we began to realize that there was just so much material out there, we realized that we weren't really the Resident Evil experts that we thought we were. So in this episode, we're not gonna focus on super specific games or movies or plot lines, but we're gonna instead talk about overarching themes and what Resident Evil has done right, what it could do better, and what really makes it the successful franchise. So first, I think we could discuss just the new movie and new game that just came out without getting super deep into it and no spoilers or anything, but we've talked
I just want to say up front that I never actually thought that I was a Resident Evil expert.
Sorry. I didn't mean to.
I don't know about you guys, but I never made that claim.
I feel like think we all kind of had an idea of it, though.
Yeah, we all kind of had a general idea of it, and it seemed like we each were thinking that maybe the others would know a little more.
Yeah.
We could, like, piece
it. I thought it would be easy, but it turned out to not be super easy.
I think that was the point, right? Well, yeah. We can do an easy episode on Resident Evil.
Yeah, because there was a game and a new movie.
And it's been with us. Like, it was one of those... Yeah. Series that we've all grown up with.
Totally. I watched a lot of the Resident Evil movies with my dad, so I have a lot of memories of just like him and I being like, oh, that headshot was so good, like, run, look out for those dogs. But I just went and saw the new movie last night. I know you guys haven't had a chance to see it yet. In general, I feel like it was definitely true to the movie franchise in that it is very action heavy. Very much just she goes from fighting one thing to fighting another thing. And so it definitely felt like a Resident Evil movie. Felt like all the rest, it was maybe better than some of the past ones. But there were some things that I wish they had done better, specifically falling into tropes of horror movies, like killing off the black character and the lesbian character, saying some kind of shitty things about women. And I think we'll get into, like...
They're kind of guilty of that throughout the whole franchise, aren't they?
Totally. I think we'll get more into, like, is this good feminism or not? Because it definitely has a lot of strong female characters, but maybe not in a very reasonable way.
Yeah.
So I feel like it maybe the reason why none of us super got into Resident Evil is maybe it's not super for us. It's kind of lacking in some of the things that I want it to be, besides just creepy, cool monsters. But I feel like the new game that came out is totally in the direction that I want more Resident Evil things to be.
Yeah, from what I've seen of the new game, and I, just a disclaimer, I haven't played it myself quite yet, but from what I've seen of it, I really want to. It does seem like it's got, like, a really dark sort of atmosphere to it, and mm-hmm. It does seem like a pretty badass shooter with a lot totally. Of, like, fun game action going on.
And I think this one is more about the things that you are attacking or running from, and less about... Can I get, like, a super powerful weapon and be super badass feeling? Which I don't really want to play as much.
I've heard two opposite ends of the spectrum on this game. As far as feedback from people so far, a lot of people seem to really love it and love the new direction it's gone in. And then I've heard people literally say it's just not a Resident Evil game.
Mm-hmm. In what way?
Ryan's been playing it all week, and I think he feels that way. He has had a lot of frustration, feels like it's not a Resident Evil game. I think that the survival horror game thing is fairly new to us, right? Since, like, Outcast kind of started that, but it's a very niche kind of area of video games. I think that people who play... Resident Evil's never been that kind of game. It's always been kind of more, I don't know, what you would consider like an over-the-shoulder kind of shooter, right?
Yeah. That, like, third-person view.
Yeah, yeah. And I think for maybe, I don't know, maybe more casual gamers, should I say? Like, I know that just from Ryan's point of view, I think he's not somebody who goes out and plays horror games all the time. Mm-hmm. It's more kind of based on what franchise it is and what characters are involved. And so I think this is the first exposure to this, the first time he's really played like a survival horror game of that type. And
interesting, the
frustration seems to be out of, like, you know, well, I have to look for all this stuff that I have to get through this door to find this special thing, and then I have to do that thing to do that thing. It's not just like you can't just work your way through the story. You know,
mm-hmm. You have to really plan ahead and use some strategies.
There's a lot of, like, backtracking. There's a lot of just wandering around and trying things multiple times. And I think some people just don't have the patience for that kind of a game. I totally would if I wasn't scared out of my wits to play the game. Like, that's the kind of game that I love. I could easily wander around and just loot the hell out of everything and solve puzzles
and just
all day.
A house. Yeah.
Yeah, if there weren't scary things chasing me, then I would be playing this game. I'd be all over it. But then it wouldn't be Resident Evil, so...
Yeah. I feel like I, as somebody who isn't super, super into the games, but as more of an outsider view, I think that over this pretty short period of time, the games have changed so freaking much. And as far as just, like, graphics and what you can do with video games and what people are really interested in playing, so that the video games have changed their genre, I feel like, a lot, and they've really, like, not been afraid to try new things and see if it works and see if it, like, gets people excited again. So the fact that it doesn't feel like a Resident Evil game makes me think it kind of is a Resident Evil game in a way. Does that make sense? Like, because they're responding to, like, what's popular right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And the first one really was kind of a little bit genre-defining. It wasn't really the first horror video game, but it really, mm-hmm. like you said in the intro there, it did a lot for the genre, and it was pretty unexpected and really difficult and obtuse. It was...
Yeah, and, like, stressful to play, but, like, in a fun way.
Yeah.
Maybe we could say it kind of, like, it appeals more to the modern gamer who's always looking for something new, mm-hmm. like a new challenge. But it doesn't exactly play fan service to people who are just looking for more Resident Evil.
Yeah, but it's also nice for them to do a Resident Evil game that you don't really need to know about Resident Evil to get into.
Right.
Yeah. Because there is so much. I can see why some people wouldn't bother to see the movies, and if they like want to play a game but don't feel like they know the story, like why they would avoid it. But this this one you can totally play without knowing anything.
Yeah,
so maybe it's just for people who don't know Resident Evil very well.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. Since it's such an old franchise at this point, I'm sure they're trying to get new players and a new audience in on this. So they definitely need to make it something accessible to more modern audiences that may not have played the originals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, just from watching, it's kind of rotate around this crazy family that's diseased by something. Mm-hmm. They're not exactly zombies, but they're obviously have some kind of virus, and they're trapped in this, and they trapped you in this house, and they don't seem to have any real goal other than just to kind of like torment you regularly.
Yeah. Hunt you down.
Yeah. And so it's like, there's elements of Resident Evil, you know, the, I don't remember what they're called, the black gooey things that grow out of the floor.
The T-virus.
Yeah. These kind of like
monsters,
viral monster things
with
that
like
crawl
big up. Crazy mouths and things.
Yeah. They grow out of like slimy stuff on the floor, different kinds of teeth. And so that feels Resident Evil. But on the other side of it, yeah, there's no recognizable characters. There's no like,
we haven't seen a single Umbrella Corp logo.
No, if it didn't say Resident Evil, I'm not sure I would know it was a Resident Evil game.
Same. I've only seen like the first hour and a half of gameplay, so I don't know how it ends, but I think it's smart for them to have a movie franchise that is so big and over the top and like it's a spectacle, and then have another option for people that is a lot smaller and more contained within a house with fewer characters, mm-hmm. and it's more of exploring things and not just like action throwing at your face, so that it can appeal to so many different people,
which is kind of the opposite of what the movies do, right?
And this movie is...
I don't know if we want to jump around in the movies, but they're so rinse and repeat.
Yeah, they totally are. And this one's supposed to be the last one, so do you guys have any ideas of, like, where the franchise would go? Do you think they're over? Do you think they're changing it to be more of this smaller kind of storytelling?
As in the game franchise after the movies are gone?
Yeah, or are they going to do more movies? Because, no spoilers, but they did kind of leave it open-ended.
Did they?
Yeah. Like, it was like, my name is Alice, and this is the end of my story. And then by the end, it's like, but my job isn't over yet. Like, but you just said it's the end.
Yeah, as soon as I saw that it was called Final Chapter, I'm like, you don't really name something Final Chapter unless it's not the final chapter.
Is it really, though? Yeah.
That's never the end.
I don't know. For me, Apocalypse should have been the... You see Apocalypse, it's like, okay, that's the end of everything.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's the Apocalypse-ish.
Yeah, ish. That should be a movie. Apocalypse-ish. Yeah, I'm not sure where they would go with the franchise at this point. I don't know how this most recent movie leaves off at the end, but one thing I do actually respect and like about the Resident Evil series is that they kind of have a way of reinventing themselves. Sometimes it's bad and in a cheesy and dumb way, but they always find ways to just completely reanimate the story and just bring it back to life, which I'm
sure... Reanimate?
Yeah, reanimate. That wasn't even intentional. Wow, okay. But yeah, I know that's frustrating. I know it's frustrating to me sometimes, like, just let it go, let's move on at some points, but at the same time... I mean, they know their world well. They know how to just bring it back and do something else with it. So, kind of got to respect it.
Yeah. I think that if I could try to generalize, I think the games that have maybe not done so well are the ones where they just don't even add things to the story so much. Like, they're just trying to practice with a new mechanic or, like, give you a new kind of gameplay, which isn't enough so much. But this new game is definitely adding more dimension to, like, the possibilities of what kinds of stories could be told in this universe.
I mean, I don't know. My biggest thing with the movies, when we sat down and I started researching this, mm-hmm. I gotta say, like, I can't remember which movie is which. Like, they all just run together in my head, besides the first one. The first one always stands out. That's, you know, I was in love with that first movie. I remember seeing it when it was fairly new, mm-hmm. and just thinking, this is the most incredible thing. You know, there were just the best, like, death scenes, and then the monsters showed up, and then, and the creepy little girl, the Red Queen, is running the place, and she's just like a mean, vicious little girl. And, you know, and then you've got, you've got Mila Jovovich, and you've also got Michelle Rodriguez, like, just kicking ass all over the place. I think at that point I just hadn't really seen any movies. That was before Tomb Raider, you know, mm-hmm. this was like before I'd really seen any movies, I think, with really good kind of kick-ass women.
Letting women do awesome fight scenes.
Barring Alien, you know, like Ripley came a long time ago, but I can't think of another like franchise that kind of had that like sci-fi horror mix with a couple of badass women in it like that. Mm-hmm. While it may not be a good example of feminism by today's standards, I think when I first saw it, I kind of fell in love with the formula of the movie.
Yeah, I agree. I remember when we were preparing for this, I was like going over my thoughts of what I remember from the series, because I've watched all of these movies and I've played at least most of the games, but it's been so long. And the main thing that stuck out to me about the original was that how much I wanted to be Mila Jovovich.
Even though, like, the worst things happened to her.
But she was so awesome. So, yeah, I know, like, at the time, it definitely was a huge influence of, wow, this woman is just going through and kicking so much ass. But while we're here, let's talk about that first movie.
Now we've seen her do that slide shoot, right?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
About a million times since then.
The first movie was one of the things that I rewatched in preparation for this. And holy shit, the graphics are so bad. Oh my god, they do not hold up. Oh my god.
That's
so...
one of the sad things about all of the Resident Evil anything, I feel like, is that they are so, like, because they're trying to be on the cutting edge, they maybe dive into certain effects and things like that before they're really perfected.
Right, and they're like,
and it really, really dates them. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, at the time, it's like, oh, cool, they're doing something that nobody else does. And then, like, not even 3 years later, it's like, holy shit, that looks
awful. Yeah.
Come on, that laser room still looks pretty cool.
Yeah. Even though it's glass walls and that doesn't make sense.
But one thing that really struck me about the Red Queen, the little girl, and all that, it really made me realize how much this whole plot is like GLaDOS going crazy with access to zombies.
Totally.
Yeah.
Did she return in the most recent movie?
She is a super big part of it.
Is she still all GLaDOS-y? Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yeah, it's exactly the same kind of voice and look and feel of the like interface.
I kind
of
love that hologram. I like the their choice of using a small girl to represent the, I guess you want to say,
the all powerful
of this computer system. Mm-hmm. It's like they just know how creepy kids are and they just really want to add that on.
I think it's interesting that, like, so often computer interfaces when they're humanized are women. I forget where I heard this or if it's even real or if it was just like somebody speculating, but like when you are in mass transit area, like if you're going down into the subway or something, they'll use female voices for just information kind of stuff and use male voices for like directions, like you go here now or something. And like the psychology of like you will listen better to a man if he's telling you to do something and you listen better to a woman if it's just information. I don't know if that's real or not, but
I've heard from a study that when they use women's voices and that kind of thing, it is more calming. So they tend to use women's voices on things that might give people anxiety.
Unless she's a little girl telling you're gonna die.
Yeah.
You're all going to die.
But don't you feel calm?
Just humor me here. What if this all started by a man who thought that women were a mystery and that people think computers are a mystery, so obviously they should be portrayed by women?
Yeah, there's like some secrets that you're not meant to know kind of thing. Or it's just unknowable. But really, it's just because you don't want to know.
Right.
This is taking me totally off topic, but I just have to ask. This reminds me of the movie Her. Mm-hmm. You guys ever seen that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
With Scarlett Johansson playing the voice of the interface.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty incredible. And I don't know.
Ex Machina, too, also has a female
That's true.
Robot going on there. Cyborg.
Now I'm just going to, every movie that I watch that has computer voices, I'm going to listen to pay attention if they're
female.
Yeah,
yeah. Because I feel like whenever I think of, like, sci-fi, like, computer, how is this doing? Or, like, computer, do this. It's always like, yes, of course. The cynical part of me wants to think, like, oh, it's because we want women to serve us kind of thing. Or maybe it's just nicer.
As soon as he started saying that about mass transit, I was like, I don't think I've ever been on mass transit that didn't have a woman's voice.
Yeah, it's one of those things that once you think about it, you can't stop noticing it.
Star Trek has always used female voices for the computer.
Mm-hmm. Which it could easily just be something like Star Trek kind of laid that foundation, and now people are just comfortable with that, and so that's why people keep doing it that way.
That's a good point.
Or maybe it is some weird psychological thing. I don't know.
We're gonna have to look into this and incorporate.
Women have more information.
Yeah.
We got all the deets. Can't believe I mm-hmm. said that word.
The
deets. Just forget I said that.
We are never gonna forget it, Melissa.
Edit that out. It's recorded. But while we're talking about women and all of that kind of thing, do we feel like overall this is a good representation of powerful women, or is it exploitation, kind of exploitative?
I think it's pretty exploitative, personally. Like, when I was young and watching the original movies and playing the original games, I was like, yeah, I'm a badass and I'm a woman, this is awesome. Mm-hmm. When you actually delve into it and, like, look at what's going on there, she's kind of become, yeah, it's not only is she being used, but she's become this weird trope of the super-powered woman that can do anything.
Yeah, and I think that I'm kind of about to repeat what you just said. Immediate response you want to have maybe is, oh yes, of course women can, like, be really powerful and do everything. But it's also within the story, like, Alice is put into the situation and she didn't really ask for it. And it's more just a story about a woman who's forced to shoulder all of this burden and just expected to, which is life. And, like, yeah, that checks out.
So I had found actually a study that someone did. They actually put together a slideshow on female character representation in Resident Evil. And just a couple of quick mm-hmm. notes to offer up to this discussion that is made here. Kind of bullet points here. The first one is, compared to female characters, male characters appear more frequently, talk significantly more, and engage in noted behaviors more, such as achieving and showing leadership. Mm-hmm. In addition, the video games provide distorted representation of women and minorities, therefore exposure to these images can have a negative effect on users' perception of women. For instance, women are usually perceived as subordinate, passive, and dependent, with sexual relationships as a central aspect.
I can see that. There's one moment in the new movie where this character, Claire, is about to have a conversation with Alice. She enters the room. Alice is talking to this man. The man leaves. And Claire is like, you know, we're together. Like, that's the first thing that she needs to tell Alice, is that she's dating this guy. That's, like, the most important thing that you need to know about this character. And I'm like, come on, guys. You can do better. And also, there are so many times in Resident Evil movies where I feel like there are women who you just don't even know their name. That's, like, not even that important.
Yeah.
And actually, this person did pretty good. They're listing various female characters. Two that were represented strongly were Jill Valentine and Claire Redfield.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of examples of what was done right, I think, is it goes against gender stereotypes of video game characters, and that they were both, you know, take charge, strong women.
Mm-hmm.
They're masculine, dominant, and active characters. Not that I'm happy about the word masculine being used in there.
Yeah, I kind of definitely have a problem with, like, this woman is strong because she is masculine.
Right. But I think the point that they have dark practical clothing and neutral hair and makeup is applicable, especially in video gaming. So I wanted to do Resident Evil. I wanted to do Alice one time for Halloween. And I ran into this problem of
that whole night.
Yeah, I ran into this problem of, like, you know, I really love the first movie the most, but I can't walk around on Halloween in a red cocktail dress slit up the front, you know? Like, I struggled to find a film that she was wearing a costume that would be both comfortable, practical, and, you know, just not.
Yeah. At least she has practical shoes.
Yeah. Well, that's true.
Yeah, that's, like, the one thing.
And yeah, I ended up going with the, I always want to say it's Apocalypse, but I think I'm wrong about that. The one that was in the desert.
Extinction?
Was it Extinction?
Yeah, that sounds.
It might have been, yeah.
The zombie
the
attack
one that's
in
like
the desert.
Mad Max.
Yeah. Yeah, and she's got, like, a duster jacket and shorts and, like, a tank top. Like, normal clothing.
Oh, I remember seeing you in that costume.
Yeah, I had to build about 7 different kinds of straps for all the gun holsters. And going to the bathroom was really hard because they were all like attached mm-hmm. together and hanging off of me in different places. So I had to like unattach all these guns and drop them on the floor.
It's a whole process.
It is not practical for peeing. I don't know how. I guess she doesn't mm-hmm. really need to pee.
Yeah.
The desert.
That's always a question with costumes in general. Like anytime I show somebody my Lich costume from last year, they're like, "How'd you use a bathroom?" I'm like, I didn't. Straight up did it.
But I think overall, a lot of the women that are deemed powerful in this franchise are very like fit into a certain type of look and dress and feel, and like you're only allowed to be powerful if you do it in a certain way, versus showing more women of color or chubby women or anything else.
Yeah.
I feel like the women are represented in a good way in that they all seem to be strong, tough women. Mm-hmm. The costuming was still hypersexualized and not so practical. Yeah.
An outdated view of strong women, basically, or women in those situations.
Not that, video game movies in general don't have a great track record for strong women. I mean, even Lara Croft is, I think one of a good example of a strong, intelligent woman in video gaming, and poor girl never gets to wear a jacket. She just runs all over the world in a skinny tank top and a tiny pair of shorts.
She just got her boobs under control in the most recent video game. It's taken decades.
Yeah. There was that one game that she had like pointy like robot boobs.
Oh my god, it's the worst.
They were a weapon in themselves. She was just like poking people in the eye with those things. I just don't know how she climbs the side of mountains without getting a serious wedgie in those tiny shorts she's always wearing.
No kidding.
They're like hot shorts. Mm-hmm.
I also get mad about the fact that it's a zombie movie and you don't want so much exposed skin. You'd think these guys would know by now. Like, tight clothes is fine because, like, you don't want things that, zombies can grab onto.
You want to be able to move fast.
Unless you cover yourself in, like, petroleum jelly, Vaseline.
Oh, so slippery.
Yeah, then they couldn't grab
you. Or bite you.
Which might
right
actually
off.
Be better than having clothing hanging off of you that they can grab onto.
Man, that is clever.
That movie Bronson with Tom Hardy where he gets in a fight in the prison and he covers himself in butter before he fights so nobody can grab him.
So smart.
It's a real thing. I'm not making this up.
It's hilarious.
He gets into fights totally naked and covers himself in butter before he does it.
That's kind of brilliant.
You just have to be careful not to get it on your feet because then you just like constantly be falling.
Yeah.
No. And then you're just a tasty snack. You're already buttered up.
You're zombie based with like a series of like water slides, but you just cover yourself in petroleum jelly and boom, past all the zombies.
I just got this picture in my head of zombies trying to eat people with Vaseline on them, like dogs when you give them peanut butter. They're all walking around going like they can't swallow the Vaseline.
This has to be a comic now.
They just starve the zombies out by shoving Vaseline in their mouths.
That is the best zombie defense I have ever heard.
It reminds me of the graves of suspected vampires with like stuff in their mouths, like big rocks in their mouths and things.
Yeah.
So smart. So going back to Resident Evil after that zombie tangent. Well, how do we feel about the zombies in Resident Evil? Are they zombies? Are they infected?
They're totally zombies.
I don't know. Because at what point do zombies become big, like, monsters?
When they're mindless. When they're not in control of their own actions. Like, they don't have a brain to control themselves with. That's my take on the whole zombie thing. Once they're not in control of their own actions, they are zombies. Whether it's from a rising from the dead or from a virus or mm-hmm. what have
you. Okay. It's not necessarily die and come back to life, which I think they kind of do in this movie.
Yeah, they do. It's like kind of like a double zombie here. But they both mm-hmm. died and they were infected. Yeah.
Well, I think also for me, zombies are very human. And in the Resident Evil movies and games, they become very unhuman. And that's part of the shock value of it is like, oh God, that I thought that was a little kid, but it has a like crazy tentacle face or things like that. Or like, what is this giant creature chasing me? But I feel like that's kind of branching off into a different category, maybe.
Those are the mutants. That kind of thing actually reminds me a lot of Half-Life. I feel like, I honestly don't know which one came first, Half-Life or Resident Evil, but it seems like they share a lot of similarities in terms of the zombies and the facilities. Yes,
yeah. Interesting. I'm thinking Resident Evil came first, but I don't know Half-Life very well.
I have a pretty wide open view of what a zombie is. We keep saying we're going to have this discussion and we're saving it for a zombie episode.
Basically sprinkling it into every every zombie-related conversation we have.
Mm-hmm. I kind of feel like since the original definition of zombie was about someone...
Like voodoo.
Yeah, like voodoo, someone being possessed, mm-hmm. and they're still alive, they're not eating people. I think that the fact that pop culture kind of adopted the term zombie to refer to something...
Romero did.
And Romero... Well, I don't even think Romero did. I think he called them ghouls.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, in the first one, at least.
I think that for that fact alone, because the word's kind of been just taken from to use mm-hmm. whatever we want it to, I think I don't believe in putting a firm pinpoint on what qualifies as a zombie and what doesn't.
Definition.
For me, if something is diseased or dead enough that it is eating people and not communicating. But then again, you know, there's the movie that Jackie mentioned a few episodes ago with the zombies who are able to be healed and they have love.
Mm-hmm.
And they were still technically zombies.
Yeah.
But did they actually eat people? I guess they did, right?
Yeah.
In that movie?
Yeah, they
okay,
did.
I think if you're eating people, then you're a cannibal. If you're eating people and you're, like, seriously diseased and your brain's not functioning properly, then you're a zombie. How's that?
Mm-hmm. Solid.
Regardless of how you got there.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess we could categorize things as, like, are you specifically aiming for the head? Then it's probably a zombie. Yeah. Like, what's the best way to kill it would maybe be the best way. But also, like, the hallmark of any good and also, like, so bad they're good zombie movies or stories is that man is the true monster, which is totally present in the whole Umbrella Corporation corporate greed. And yeah,
you can just shoot it in the leg, then it's just a cannibal.
Yeah.
By the way, Resident Evil came first
before Half-Life.
Yeah, really close. Resident Evil was 1996 and Half-Life was 1998.
Oh, really?
I had to find out.
Yeah.
I was going to just ask, when I think about the Resident Evil movies, I think there's certain characters that pop out to me.
Yeah.
Like certain villains, especially. The very first time that we saw that, I don't know, what do you call that thing that was on the train in the very first one? It was they were on the subway trying to escape from the underground bunker.
Yeah.
And that creature kind of came down from on top of the, there's a word for them. What the hell do they call those things?
We need a Resident Evil glossary.
That would be such a good, like, coffee table book of all of the monster designs. Yeah. And like what
I just want to say, we tried several times over the past few weeks to find a Resident Evil expert to come on the show and talk with us, and everybody that I talked to gave me the same story. Like, I've played it, I've watched some of it, but I don't think I know enough to talk about it. Mm-hmm. That's what everybody said. So I think we're not alone in this feeling that, like, Resident Evil movies and games kind of blur together in your mind at some point.
Yeah, especially with the movies, because I think that all of them follow the same, like, she's fighting something. Okay, now she's fighting the next thing, and now they're fighting the next thing, and there's no time to breathe in between.
Yeah.
So it all kind of runs together, which, like, makes it feel like a video game, but
right.
It's hard for keeping a plot straight in
your
head.
Even video games, though, are usually broken up by levels and things, so you kind of, you start to organize it in your head of like, all right, I've already faced that boss, and I faced that boss, now I need to do that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the movies, especially these movies, are different reiterations of the same exact boss over and over and over again.
How can we make
the same protagonist?
Yeah.
You can basically just divide it up into what was Alice wearing?
Mm-hmm. Just want to talk about those dogs.
Those dogs are my favorite.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think those are my favorite villains from these. Yeah, the creatures were those. They were like skinless.
They were like inside
those
out.
Those dogs were amazing.
In the new movie, they have more dogs, which are not as satisfying to me as they originally were in the earlier movies.
Why is that? Were they not as intense? Or
They were intense because it's a huge pack of them.
Yeah.
But they don't look as gross. And they look more like monsters and less like dogs. So you can't really, like, get confused and think, oh, it's just a cute little pupper. No, it's a horrible monster. And there's just a part where they, like, jump into the water and the dogs jump in after them. But because they, like, don't have lungs or something, they can't float, so they sink. And it's just, like, very anticlimactic.
That's a bummer.
But that's the storytelling part. That's not the dog's fault.
One thing I have noticed throughout the entire Resident Evil series is that there is a very common theme of, oh shit, there's a crazy monster coming at me. I better kill it or run away from it and then close myself off in this other place and then turn around and there's like a huge amount of that same monster. When I was watching the first one the other day, it was just happening like every 2 minutes. It's like, this is getting boring.
That was one of the critiques that when I saw the movie last night, I went with a group of friends. The hardest part of watching the movie is just that it's so much action. It's just so much cut, 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 fight, 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 that it just like you just glaze over because it's too much to take in. And it's like hard for your brain to even follow like where the action is, like what direction people are walking or punching, or it's just so much.
It doesn't make that kind of thing, like if you're exposed to that much of it, it doesn't make it very dynamic or interesting when it happens. Like overusing the word fuck on a TV show. Save it for the right moment.
Yeah. Which in the games, at least you're interacting with it and responding to it in a way that you have to like actively be engaged. But in the movies, it just doesn't work out as well because you can totally check out.
In the games, they force you to solve puzzles too. So that adds a
thoughtfulness to
it. Exactly. A different kind of scene.
This is a tiny bit of a spoiler. But Jackie, just for your FYI, this new Resident Evil movie goes into some really uncomfortable spider territory really early on.
Oh, jeez. Thank you for the warning.
Yeah, really creeped out watching it last night. There's a like doors that you want to go into and they're just covered in crawling spiders.
No. Oh, God. Eject.
It's tough. And it's a dark room, so you can't see them. You know, you almost kind of walk up to them and with a flashlight. And then it's like, oh, boy, okay, the door's moving.
Yeah. From eject.
So you don't need to play the game. I just saved you.
All spiders all the time.
I mean, Ryan's only on the second boss and then they showed up already. So
dang. How do you guys feel about the general campiness of all of it? Because I feel like in all of, at least in the movies and in the games, because they're kind of a little outdated, when you go back and play them, there's like definitely some camp to it. And it's just okay in this franchise. Like, it seems like if the script isn't very good and the dialogue isn't that great, that's fine. We're here to see the big creatures. Do you think that they can like keep doing that? I feel like they have to change that soon.
I mean, they've been doing it for forever.
Yeah, and no one seems to care.
They're gonna stop or change. I think it gets old after a while, personally.
Yeah, I'm trying to put my finger on it, just because like I love campy horror and like goofiness in horror.
But at some point, you want more.
Yeah, but I just don't have patience for it with Resident Evil.
I think the campiness of the games is part of what kept me away from playing them through the years.
Yeah.
Just because I would watch people play and just the really terrible dialogue.
Yeah, it's so cheesy.
Yeah, and the story never seemed to go anywhere, so I just wasn't interested in. By the way, that creature in the first movie is called a licker.
Oh,
that, yeah.
More gross.
The licker. Now I remember the giant tongue as soon as you say that. Yeah.
Yeah, the campiness, I think, is what kept me. I didn't feel it as much in the movies, but, mm-hmm. you know, the movies just feel very. Like, the campiness level feels like average for an action.
Yeah. For sure.
Video game type movie.
We don't need to focus so much on plot because we have explosions.
Yeah, except for maybe Nemesis. I think he was pretty campy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he just reminded me so much of the Toxic Avenger.
With his, like, goofy face.
Yes, the Toxic Avenger. That's what every time I see him, that's who I think of.
He just looks bloated all the time.
Yeah.
With, like, a cloth face.
Yeah. They do have some real good monsters in this whole span of content, though. So it's okay if they have a couple misses.
Yeah, the girl with the, where, like, her face opens up into this kind of, like, lotus-looking thing with, like, talons on the end of it. That was pretty gross and creepy.
Yeah, that's one of those monsters that really reminds me of Half-Life. There's a monster, like, just like that.
Or Half-Life reminds you of Resident Evil.
Yeah, I guess the other way around. I think we're starting to like peter
out.
Yeah,
a little bit. I think we're getting to our bottoms of our barrels. Is that a phrase? Scraping the bottom. I mean, there are a lot of like common kind of political themes of don't trust giant corporations, don't trust the media like covering things up, which is relevant.
That's the part that's honestly scariest to me about the Resident Evil series at all this point, is how relevant it is to today's political situation.
And things like bioweapons and kind of like the science of like just doing it because we can and not asking if we should kind of thing. That is real scary.
I'm just thinking like we've all talked about our criticisms of the movies and the games together. So I think the big question that we haven't hit on, right, is why do people keep seeing these movies?
Yeah, why is it good?
And they have big, they have big numbers. So like the people games, go out like, and see them over and over again.
It's like Capcom's biggest game as far as like software sales.
And then everybody complains about how bad they are afterwards, but we keep seeing them over and over again.
Yeah. I think at this point it has a lot to do with nostalgia, especially people in our respective generations. Mm-hmm. we're not all that far apart in age, the three of us, but we're close enough to have all grown up with this series. People who are around our ages also grew up with this series, so I think a lot of them, when they hear, oh, a Resident Evil movie is coming out, or a Resident Evil game, is like, oh shit, I remember that. I'm gonna go see it. And then they're like, shit.
Yeah, it's a good, like, popcorn, maybe sneak a flask in kind of movie.
I think every time I talk to somebody about seeing Resident Evil movie, they're like, oh yeah, I like the first one, and then they just kept getting worse and worse.
Yeah,
that's the same comment everybody makes, and yet they just keep making them, and every time they make enough money to make another one.
We definitely ran into that so heavily when we were trying to look for a guest for this show, all three of us, at least independently or just widely over on freaking Twitter and Facebook. We're looking for somebody to come in and talk to us about Resident Evil, and that we just kept running into that. Like, people were like, oh yeah, that was a cool series,
but just like not inspired enough to talk about it.
Yeah, I played a few of them here and there. Mm-hmm. Every now and then when I got nothing else to play.
So my opinion is that we should stop Resident Evil here. I think it should just stop and move on here.
I could see that. I feel like the Resident Evil stuff isn't popular for lack of other zombie type of things. It's not like it's the only thing that doing this.
When back around the early 2000s, it kind of maybe was.
Yeah.
At least for a little while there.
Like, it started out real strong, and then it just kept repeating itself. But going forward, I think that the new game is a testament to the fact that they could do different things with it and hopefully do it well. And because it's all known for how can we make the human body look crazy and grotesque and scare the hell out of people and like really just go after you, not give you time to think or react. Like, you just have to either run, like fight or flight, which they super tap into all of those kinds of emotions.
I've seen people remark that the new game is not as scary. Well, no, that it's not like super difficult, but it looks pretty difficult to me. I mean, I've seen Ryan hammer away at the first boss. I don't know how many times. Had to hit him 7 to 10 times or something. It's just crazy, and the guy just doesn't die.
Yeah.
I think I ended up actually cheating a little bit and looking up some like tips on how to kill this thing, because it had become frustrating to where, you know, it's like, all right, we just want to get on to the next thing, and this thing won't die.
Yeah. So what do you guys think of the franchise continuing from here? Like, should it just stay in 2017 and leave it, or should it keep going?
There is some value to when things know when to stop, and when things know, like, it maybe got to the point where they should have stopped earlier before it got bad. But I wouldn't be mad if there were more.
I mean, where else is there for the game to go from here? You know, now they've made a first-person exploration survival game, so, like, where else would they go with it?
Telltale Games. That's exactly where it would go.
Yeah.
That would actually be more interesting to me. You know, without the kind of like high tension attack mode all the time.
Yeah,
I would be interested, because it's also such a strong like virus kind of game. I would be interested in like, you are an organization trying to take down Umbrella Corp, and like, how do you battle this gigantic, crazy, secretive corporation that clearly has the media in its pocket and like has all of the money it could possibly need? How do you kind of go against that?
Asking for a manual of how to face a foe that we might actually face in real life in the coming
years.
It'd
be nice to practice a couple times first. Well, because I really love like Pandemic, and Pandemic Legacy is super fun.
Yeah.
So I could see like, how do we control the virus as a strategy kind of game? Maybe it is a board game versus a video game. But there's also the Resident Evil playing card game, which is pretty fun.
I would like just as a story-based game that all battle revolves around a match three puzzle. So I don't actually have to get killed. I just keep puzzling my way through the through mm-hmm. the game.
Well, zombies just like stand at the windows like meh. So you kind of get the mm-hmm.
While I move the gems around. I build up my mana so that they can't kill me.
Is there anything where you're one of the scientists developing the tests and testing the stuff on people?
That would be Half-Life.
Because that would be interesting.
Yeah, in Half-Life, you are one of the scientists who was working on the crazy shit there, and then everything goes haywire, and there are aliens and military, and everyone's trying to kill you.
Mm-hmm. That's okay. Also sounding very close to Bioshock.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure they have much more space to explore into. I mean, you could make the Resident Evil game into any kind of, like, genre of game, really, but yeah. People are gonna stop. I think eventually people are gonna stop caring just because it has the Resident Evil name on it, you know?
Right.
Yeah. How far? I mean, maybe a big open world, like, RPG type thing would be fun.
That'd be interesting.
But that's kind of, would just be like The Witcher.
Yeah.
Monster Hunter with potions and... Mm-hmm. Special abilities to throw fire, so.
Well, cool. I think we've maybe exhausted.
As far as we can.
Yeah. I really was hoping we could say we didn't talk
Resident Evil.
Yeah. I was really hoping we could find someone who is, like, in love with it so they could explain why they love it.
Like, in a non-confrontational way. Just...
Yeah. No, because I love it for the nostalgia's sake, but...
Yeah. When we were talking about this, I was like, we have to discuss, like, why is this still a thing? Not, like, in a judgy way, but, like, honestly, how is it keeping afloat this long?
Mm-hmm. Because they maybe know their audience pretty well. Like, especially with the movies, they know that if they make this movie, they're gonna make money, mm-hmm. which, good for them, but... Yeah, that's definitely a reason to make a movie, but maybe not the right reason.
Yeah.
Not to sound like a cynic, but I'd be willing to bet that this one does worse than most in the past, just because there's so much, like we've talked about this before, there's such a higher quality standard set.
Yeah, there's so much more horror movies out there that you could spend your money on.
And they are definitely influencers of that. I think they need mm-hmm. to kind of let it go and be that franchise that influenced a whole new generation of zombie films and virus films and stuff, but yeah. Or movies and games and shit.
But... Go back to the old style arcade, mm-hmm. Where they just give you like big plastic guns so you can shoot zombies.
Now that I love.
That would be, yeah, I love.
In a home console, that would be fun, remember? Like, mm-hmm. Nintendo's the last people who gave us little guns to play with at home. They put out a console version with, like, one of those big zombie rifles.
Yeah, the big old shotgun.
Or just fire off screen to reload it.
There you go, Cop Gum. Call me.
Yeah, I think maybe also the Resident Evil whole franchise is a symptom of this started out as a Japanese horror idea, and it was created by Japanese artists, but then it kind of got very... Hollywoodized.
Yeah.
Which that's a whole other episode of talking about Japanese horror and American adaptions of it.
Yeah.
But, big one. Then we have to do that one. We might have break down Asian into, you know, continents and countries.
Yeah.
Next time we're looking for topics, let's just re-listen to this episode.
Yeah. We did a lot of talking about other stuff, not so much Resident Evil.
This is not the Resident Evil episode. This is the all ideas for future episodes episode. Yeah.
Which we kind of had last time, too. Anyways, do we have anything else? Anything?
I'm tapped.
Everybody take care of yourself, because these last weeks have been so hard.
Drink more wine. That's my remedy.
Practice self-care.
Yep.
It's okay to take a nap.
Mm-hmm. I took two naps today. Unemployment.
I'm so jealous. Naps are not in my vocabulary anymore.
I only took one, but it was a really good one.
Good. In case you guys didn't know, The Sirens of Scream is a member of the Mega Nerd Media family. Visit meganerdmedia.com for geek-related content, columns, reviews, interviews, and videos. And also, we just got sirensofscream.com, which I'm excited about. Right now, it redirects to Mega Nerd Media, which is a good place to go.
Yeah.
So you can also just go to sirensofscream.com. And if you want to talk to us, you can... reach us via email at sos@meganerdmedia.com and on Twitter at Sirens of Scream. And you can find us on Tumblr and Facebook, where we post just cool things we found that are horror related and we want to tell other people about right this moment. And yeah, Jackie, where can people find you?
I am Jackie the Robot on Twitter and Instagram.
And Melissa May.
You can find me at Lissa Punch on Twitter and Instagram.
I'm at Sierra Hauk. And next time we're going to be talking about horror for kids and like the things that we grew up watching and what makes stuff specifically for kids and what things maybe kids shouldn't see.
It's probably going to be one of those 3-hour long episodes, so prepare yourself.
Probably. Yeah.
But I'm real excited for it.
Thoughts, ideas, comments, anything, hit us up.
Yeah, for sure. Tweet at us and Facebook and email. And until then, that is a wrap. We will see you guys then.
Later.
I was at the supermarket, watching people cut in line. I started thinking about human nature. What would you do if there was no more food? My mind began to wander about greed and hunger, and just how many other countries are getting ready for another war. But the sun was shining and everything seems fine, so count me in, I'll see you on the other side. Chemical bomb, chemical bomb, eyes melt, skin explodes, everybody dead. It won't be long, it won't be long, people gonna run around losing their heads. A river of blood, who's gonna live? The earth is tired of humankind, and I think this world is gonna wash up. Bomb. Eyes melt, skin explodes, everybody's dead. It won't be long, it won't be long, people gonna run around losing their heads. A river of blood, who's gonna live?